The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
New Orleans is a city that has always shown America what is possible when we have the imagination to see the unseen. But of course, there's another side to this story, because we know that this city, a city that has always stood for what can be done in this country, has also become a symbol for what we could not do. To many Americans, the words New Orleans call up images of broken levees, water rushing through the streets, mothers holding babies up to avoid the flood. And worse, the memory of a moment when America's government failed its citizens. Because when the people of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast extended their hand for help, help was not there. When people looked up from the rooftops, for too long, they saw an empty sky. When the winds blew and the floodwaters came, we learned that for all of our wealth and our power, something wasn't right with America. We can talk about what happened for a few days in 2005, and we should. We can talk about levees that couldn't hold, about a FEMA that seemed not just incompetent, but paralyzed and powerless, about a president who only saw the people from the window of an airplane instead of down here on the ground trying to provide comfort and aid.
Wow. FEMA, incompetent, paralyzed, powerless. I wonder how many. New Orleans hadn't been rebuilt by that point. I wonder how many people died because the dear leader said that FEMA didn't do its job. FEMA, it wasn't leading the way. It was powerless. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to this show at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. Make sure that you give us the thumbs up and leave us a nice comment. You can email the show as well at td@thetrumpet.com. So that was in 2008. And since that time, by the way, the dear leader has been running the country for 12 out of the last 16 years. And the 4 years, you know, during the Trump administration, he was attacking Donald Trump nonstop, persecuting him, spying on him, harassing him, harassing his staff, his campaign, harassing him after he left office peacefully in 2021. But there he was saying, hey, FEMA and George Bush. I mean, that was a time when government agencies, they were to be criticized. You could credit. Today, if you do it, you're killing people. That's what they tell us on the meltdown. If you dare criticize FEMA, then, I mean, you are spreading misinformation. That's right. We've got a lot to get to on today's show. Hurricane Milton, Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis of Florida, he said this morning that it wasn't, thankfully, a worst case scenario, but the sun is just now coming up and they're surveying the scene, and we'll see how bad the wind damage was and the flooding and all of that sort of thing. It did go just a little bit south of Tampa, the most populated area on that coast of Florida. So it didn't take a direct hit in Tampa, but Sarasota and some of those smaller communities south of Sarasota did take a pretty good hit. And we've got the footage. We've got the montage, at least up to this point. Again, we'll probably get more video footage as we proceed. But just to go back to Hurricane Katrina for a moment, and just how merciless the regime media, or just the, back then it was the mainstream media that leaned to the left, right? And well, George W. Bush was in charge. He was the Hitler of the early 2000s. So everything he did, he just bungled it all. And FEMA too. FEMA was full of incompetent people. Now it's just perfect. It's been perfectly fixed. Now, I mean, Joe Biden and Kamala, they can do no wrong. It really does expose these people in the media, the regime media now. They're just an extension of the dear leader's government. The propaganda arm of Barack Hussein Obama. You go back just a few years, most times, and they're exposed as really the enemy of the people, as President Trump often says. Here's a Sky News report. I think this is 10 years on, but this is, you know, over in the UK. Listen to their take on the disaster relief following Katrina, clip two.
There was certainly a lot to criticize. It was a failure of government at every level. The scale of Hurricane Katrina overwhelmed the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. They were not prepared for a crisis of that size and a dislocation of that many people. Emergency response in the United States is typically driven by states and localities first, with federal assistance coming in behind that. And you also had multiple levels of breakdown in the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana as well. And so the agencies were uncoordinated. FEMA had recently become part of the newly created Department of Homeland Security. And so the chain of command issues also came into play there as well. And so instructions would be given from Washington that would change on the ground. And then coordinating with local and state officials became almost impossible because of the corruption and troubles that they had within their own governments. And pardon the expression, but it was a perfect storm of government failure at all levels.
A failure at every level of government. There's your federal government and its response. You notice he says there that FEMA had just come underneath the direction of DHS. And we have Mayorkas here recently saying, he's saying that FEMA, yeah, we're redirecting funds to the migrants. That was saying the quiet part out loud. And then since that time, the regime says, no, none of it's gone to the migrants. And they ignore what Mayorkas said just a few days ago. Just listen, Hurricane Kamala continues. She's still on the media blitz. Here she is yesterday calling in to CNN to talk about the hurricane, to talk about Milton, clip three.
Well, I'll tell you, I have spoken with local officials who have been struck, for example, by Hurricane Helene. And they are doing an extraordinary job in trying to combat the misinformation. And I'm talking about sheriffs, I'm talking about mayors, I'm talking about local officials. I don't even know their party affiliation, by the way. But leaders on the ground who know that it is not in the best interest of the people living in those areas to not know their rights, not to know what they're entitled to, and to be afraid of seeking help. It is dangerous. It is unconscionable, frankly, that anyone who would consider themselves a leader would mislead desperate people to the point that those desperate people would not receive the aid to which they are entitled. And that's why I call it dangerous. And we all know it's dangerous. And the gamesmanship has to stop. At some point, the politics have to end.
You know, Sundance had a pretty good post the other day saying they keep talking about misinformation without saying, well, what exactly is the misinformation? What exactly are some conservative commentators lying about? What did J.D. Vance lie about in his Wall Street Journal op-ed? They don't say. They just preface everything they say with, well, it's misinformation and people are dying. It's misinformation and we have the proper narrative. We have the truth. These are the spreaders of misinformation, as we've been saying this week. Listen to, we played this, I believe, last week. This is Mayorkas. This is KJP. These are the people that have said the quiet part out loud. We've also got the testimonials from those on the ground in the hills of North Carolina and elsewhere in the Southeast. And you know what's sad about this latest hurricane? We'll get to it in a second. But what's sad about this is you're not going to hear any more coverage about North Carolina, Western North Carolina, or Eastern Tennessee. And that's not to say that covering the storm in Florida is wrong. I mean, there were, as I saw in the news last night and then early this morning, there were quite a few talking heads on the scene, this time anyway, on the scene in Tampa, in Orlando, in Central Florida. But what about the missing people? Hundreds of missing people. What about the dead bodies still being discovered in North Carolina? You're probably not going to hear much about that. That segment where she called CNN. The host even said the funding at FEMA is down to $9 billion. You've already spent $11 billion on the hurricane from a week and a half ago. Is there enough money? And of course, Kamala's there saying, oh yeah, we have plenty of resources. We're totally fine. Well, even just looking at the numbers, Mayorkas said it. He said the quiet part out loud. We don't have enough money for this hurricane season. Why? Where did the money go? Listen to clip 12.
FEMA is going to be playing a pivotal role in our shelter and services program that is poised to distribute $363 million to cities and communities in need of funding.
We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season.
It's just categorically false. No, Biden did not take FEMA relief money to use on migrants.
So FEMA regional administrators have been meeting with city officials on site to coordinate available federal support from FEMA and other federal agencies. Funding is also available through FEMA's Emergency Food and Shelter Program to eligible local governments and non-for-profit organizations upon request to support humanitarian relief for migrants.
As I say, we've played that before, but it's just interesting watching it again. Just seeing the tone, no, that's categorically false. And then 2 years ago, yeah, of course, we've got plenty of funding for the migrants. We're going to send it all over the country. Everything. There's plenty of money for this. Not so much this time around. But it is a presidential campaign season. We've got less than 4 weeks to go. So you can expect the regime to come out and say, hey, everything FEMA's doing, it's just spot on. I mean, we've learned everything that we've needed to learn since Katrina in 2005. Here's the morning meltdown about just how dangerous this Trump's misinformation is. Again, the misinformation is not pointed out. We don't know what they're even talking about. But this is the new term. It's not new, but this is the term they're using. Nonstop. Clip 13.
I know some Biden officials I spoke to yesterday just deeply afraid that the Trump supporters who listen to Trump and his claims aren't going to then heed the calls from state, local, federal officials because they're not going to believe them. They think that's going to be political and they might stay and put themselves in harm's way or refuse to get that federal aid from FEMA and the like.
So people in Central Florida didn't evacuate because of Trump's misinformation. FEMA is not responding so fast. They're not helping as much in the hills of North Carolina. That's misinformation. Never mind what local residents say. You cannot criticize them. Remember KJP the other day, Peter Ducey asked a question. She said, the question is misinformation. You can't ask that question. That's violating the rules, the standards. Well, moving now to Hurricane Milton, as I say, at least judging by what Ron DeSantis' first take is, it wasn't a worst case scenario, but still quite a lot of damage. And we'll see about the casualty count later, I suppose. This is clip 4.
Milton has been an absolute wrecking ball coming ashore earlier this evening near Siesta Key, Florida. That's in Sarasota County. Now, that was just around 8:30 in the evening as a Category 3 major hurricane with 120 mile per hour winds. It's brought the complete arsenal, wind gusts past 100 miles an hour, widespread power outages, intense flooding rain north of the center, and a historic tornado outbreak in Central and South Florida. 30 tornadoes at least reported, one of which went over Wellington, Florida, and was strong enough to toss this car into the side of the house and shear off this tree. So we're not talking small tornadoes, large, violent tornadoes.
The storm is having a wide and devastating impact on Florida right now.
The wind even ripping off the roof of Tropicana Field, which had been set up as a shelter.
We'll know a lot more about the extent of the damage once we get daybreak, once the sun comes up here and we can get a better view of what's happened here. More than 3 million people without power.
The sheriff in St. Lucie County says, quote, we have lost some life, but the sheriff did not know how many people have died so far. Meanwhile, President Biden says there are thousands of federal personnel on the ground ready to go. That includes 20 million meals and 40 million liters of water.
First responders have been working all through the night to help people who were in distress. And what we can say is the storm was significant, but thankfully this was not the worst case scenario.
This from the AP. It says the storm tracked to the south in the final hours and made landfall as a Category 3 at Siesta Key, about 70 miles south of Tampa. While it caused a lot of damage and water levels may continue to rise for days, Governor DeSantis said it was not the worst case scenario. The deadly storm surge feared for Tampa appears not to have materialized. I think the wind, as it was circling around, actually came into Tampa from the east and blew the water in the other direction toward the Gulf of Mexico. This is good news, by the way, for some of our people as they assemble together in South Florida for the Feast of Tabernacles next week. Let's hope there's not too much damage down south. I forget the name of the festival location. In any event, what? I mean, 3.5 weeks left to the presidential election. And as I've been saying this week, I mean, it's not just these areas being pounded by storms. You've got the fake administration. You've got Kamala Harris just being pounded politically. I mean, nothing is getting any traction politically for Kamala Harris. And there, like I covered yesterday, I mean, her party is panicking. Listen to Ron DeSantis here as he's asked about the big brouhaha with Kamala calling him, and he evidently didn't return her call. And he's already said earlier this week, she has nothing to do with any of this. This is clip 13 or 11.
We've been doing this now nonstop for over 2 weeks between Helene and this. And so if there's anything I can leverage to benefit my people, I'm going to do it. The fact of the matter is they put out a story saying I didn't even know she was trying to reach me, but she has no role in this process. And I've been dealing with these storms in Florida under both Trump and Biden. Neither of them ever politicized it. And in fact, all the storms I've dealt with under this administration, although I've worked well with the president, she has never called in Florida. She has never offered any support. So what she's doing is she's trying to inject herself into this because of her political campaign. So as the governor here who's leading this, I don't have time for those games. I don't care about her campaign. Obviously, I'm not a supporter of hers, but she has no role in this process. And for her to try to say that my focus should be on catering to her rather than worrying about my own people just shows she doesn't understand what it means to respond to these natural disasters.
Wow, that's pretty hard hitting. She has no role and she doesn't understand. She's trying to insert herself into the conversation because of a failing political campaign. She's calling CNN. She's on the porn podcast. She's with the unfunny man at night. She's with the shock jock. And none of it's working. She didn't even pass the test that The View gave to her. We went through that yesterday with you. And the Democrats are panicking. Listen to the talking heads, clip 10.
Reason why you see Kamala Harris's campaign going on this media blitz is clearly they're seeing something in their polling, which is probably what we're seeing in our polling, that Kamala Harris is starting to drop off.
We have some new CNN reporting today about what is going on behind the scenes inside the Harris campaign and more broadly among Democrats who are growing more and more anxious about a 2016 redux.
This has been a campaign that was described by multiple Democrats, allies, aides to the vice president as a good vibes campaign. But what's also creeping in now is that anxiety. The reason for that is because these polls are not really moving. In fact, I had one source describe it to me this way, quote, people are nervous. They know the polls are tight. And a lot of us are having these flashbacks to 2016, too. We know when it can go the wrong way. So certainly some anxiety and nerves setting in as Election Day gets closer and those polls just remain deadlocked.
Probably under 20 days that you have to really get a message out. They need to be sharp. They need to be aggressive. They need to stop answering questions and start asking questions. They're doing all this and sitting down with 60 Minutes and sitting down with Colbert and sitting down. No matter what, if I come on your show, you're going to ask me the question.
That's true.
If I have a press conference, I get to ask the question.
You'd like to see her do more press conferences?
And that's why Tim is right. Like, more is more. Do everything. Be everywhere all at once, right? Do all the things. Do local TV, do podcasts, do our podcast, do Tim's podcast, do 60 Minutes, do it all.
Wait, can I ask a follow-up on that, Dan? I mean, Trump isn't doing it all. There was some reporting, again, about the manovers. But in terms of that, you know, blanket the airwave strategy that you just outlined, that's not what Trump is pursuing. And I wonder if you have a thought about what might be behind that.
Well, there are two reasons behind it. He's old, mentally declining, and lazy. So that's the first reason. The second reason is Republicans have something Democrats don't, which they have a massive media operation between Fox News, Daily Wire, all these people. We don't have that yet, so we have to work harder to do it. Trump just has these massive megaphones pushing his message to voters and into the social media ecosystem so people see it. And so that's the main reason. Like, we have to work harder than they do. But he is being very lazy and leaving a lot of votes on the table with his sort of work every few days, call Ben Shapiro and whine for 20 minutes sort of strategy.
And lie about FEMA every second day.
Wow, that last bit there, Dan Pfeiffer, the Obama guy, the senior Obama advisor, saying about Trump that he's old, he's in mental decline, and he's lazy. Excuse me, I think you're describing someone else we know about in the White House. Trump's lazy, got it. Trump never works. Trump's mentally unfit. Trump was on a podcast just yesterday, I think it was, talking about Biden sleeping on the beach. He's the current president of the United States, albeit fake. The president of the United States sleeping on camera. Trump says, you'll never see me sleeping on camera. This man sleeps everywhere that he goes. To the beach, to a convention, whatever it is. And then they shove him aside. A political coup. And then how convenient now that they can zero in on Trump's mental unfitness, just like they did in 2017. Here it is. Here it is. They've regurgitated the same false narrative. And in what world does Trump have the media on his side? He actually said that. You just heard it. Well, Republican, they've got all the media, they've got control of the media, and we just need more media outlets, like Ben Shapiro, I guess. No, you've got all the big networks. You've got MSNBC, you've got NBC, George Soros is buying up radio stations to silence conservatives. You've got social media, except for Twitter. Trump's got Twitter and barely, he has Fox, and that's it. And then a few conservative commentators. No, I don't think Trump's getting, I don't think the regime media is on Trump's side. The way he sees it, of course, is that the big networks and MS, they're fair and balanced. They're right down the middle. They're covering both sides. And then, but Fox, the damage that Fox causes. Look at the story about 60 Minutes. Taking that sit as disastrous as it was, and they can't hide it. But then they package together this segment, and they don't just edit what Kamala Harris said. They're actually taking different answers from different questions and inserting it into, I think it was the question about Israel and the regional war in the Middle East and so on, where her initial reaction, her response, her answer was just terrible. A word salad. On steroids. Then they go to the chopping block. They cut that out and they insert something from another question. This is CBS. Trump, here again, Trump was right again. Not doing CBS. They owe me an apology. In fact, they owe the nation an apology. They owe Americans an apology. Sundance said, I was initially wondering why it took CBS over 36 hours to upload the full interview in their YouTube account. Now it makes sense. He says CBS, 60 Minutes, not only edited the interview, but they also completely erased parts of the interview and structurally moved answers to questions in an intentional effort to assist the Harris campaign. In essence, CBS completely changed the interview. You can see why Trump brought his media people in to record the full interview with Leslie Stahl back in 2020. He didn't trust them. This is CBS. And then CBS for Scott Pelley to come out the other day. Well, first, since 1964, every presidential candidate has come on CBS because it's tradition. In October before the presidential election, it's tradition. You sit down with us because we're fair. We're fair. We're balanced. We speak the truth. But Trump won't come on because Trump says Leslie Stahl lied. She didn't lie. We don't lie. We fact check every story. What a joke. These people in their smug arrogance. So they're so serious. They're serious about getting Trump. And they're blinded by that rage. Hate Trump. I mean, it colors everything that they say, everything that they cover. Is seen through that prism. CBS didn't just shape or modify the interview. They literally moved answers to questions. It says here, he's quoting a tweet, the edited version that CBS put on YouTube is a work of art. Mix and match questions and answers. So here it is. Here it is. See for yourself. Clip 6.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
Hilarious. CBS didn't like the initial response about movements and advocacy and prompted and nothing, basically. She said nothing. So they took another comment later in the interview or earlier, I don't know which, and they inserted it. Well, this answer sounds better. It's more succinct. It's more on point. Says here, Sundance, it'll be interesting to see how CBS News and 60 Minutes respond to the evidence of their severe manipulation of the Kamala Harris interview. You know, you may have seen some clips. I should have brought them with me, but who's the other guy? Chris Wallace. He's on basically saying Fox News, this penalty for, you know, questioning the 2020 results, and they had to pay $700 million. And Wallace, who used to work at Fox News, he's out there saying, yeah, it's fine to see these media organizations held to account. How much do you think CBS is going to be penalized? How much are they going to have to pay for manipulating for changing an interview? They can do that all the day long. But if Fox News goes against the regime, if they tell you, hey, there's some funny business from 2020, you see what happens. You see what happens. CBS has been caught with direct evidence of their intentional effort to assist Harris. What comes next will define CBS News in the mind of many Americans who still view MSM as a valid source of information. Can the mainstream media, can they be any more discredited? or disliked or not trusted. These people. Donald Trump tweeted out a giant fake news scam by CBS and 60 Minutes. Her real answer was crazy or dumb. So they actually replaced it with another answer in order to have her or at least make her look better. Here again, Trump was right. He was right about 60 Minutes. He was right about CBS. He was right to break with tradition and say, you know what? I don't need the October interview with these people. They're liars. They're propagandists. He decides not to just days ago. And then this comes out yesterday. Frauds. They're all frauds. 60 Minutes not only edited the interview, but they also completely erased parts of the interview and structurally moved answers to questions in an intentional effort to assist the Harris campaign. I think I read that part earlier. It's stunning. It's stunning. Another post from Donald Trump. I've never seen this before, but the producers of 60 Minutes sliced and diced Kamala's answers to questions which were virtually incoherent over and over again, some by as many as four times in a single sentence or thought, all in an effort, possibly illegal, as part of the news division, which must be licensed to make her look more presidential. Yeah, where are the attorneys? Where are the cries for justice? Where are the severe financial penalties from the FCC or wherever in the government? It's not going to happen, is it? No, they can lie and get caught lying and carry right on and give you a lecture like Scott Pelley did the other night. And meanwhile, they'll tell you that Trump, well, he's just lying all the time. Listen to in case you haven't heard, Trump, he's super duper dangerous. Clip 9.
What happened to us? What is wrong with
yes.
us? I feel like I'm living in another country. So like I'm going to really feel that way come if the election goes in the Trump direction. It's like how bankrupt yeah. have so many souls become? I've just been really down lately, not about Trump, but about who we are, and is this who we've become? Because if that's the case, it's much bigger than Donald Trump.
If you're someone like Senator James Lankford,
a real conservative,
wow, by the way, a real conservative who spent months and months working on a bipartisan immigration deal, Donald Trump makes one phone call and it's dead. So the people who actually do want to get things done and do want to improve the lives of Americans, it's discouraging.
But it proves that the Republicans have become a post-policy party. You know, you have one party that is going to have policies that maybe some of us on here won't like.
Right.
You have somebody who's going to be a president who's going to, you know, do what she does, and some will be good, some will be bad, and somebody who is basically sociopathic, who wants to be an autocrat, and the party doesn't care because it's a vehicle for raw power and for staying in power, and that's all it's about.
I mean, we're living in the age of massive disinformation, of one side that doesn't care about the facts, that lies about everything, won't admit to anything, and is putting our Constitution and our republic at risk. Stop me if you disagree.
No.
Okay.
It's what frustrates me. There are going to be some males in our society that will refuse to vote for a potential female president because they don't think females are smart enough to be president. We could line all those guys up and shoot them. They clearly don't understand the way the world works.
Ridiculous rhetoric there at the end. That guy teaches at Kansas, the University of Kansas, just north of Oklahoma, a red state. Here's this professor. Any man that doesn't vote for Kamala, line him up and shoot him. I mean, it would sound like a joke, a really dark joke. If Donald Trump wasn't shot at this past summer, if assassins' bullets weren't flying in the direction of Trump and his supporters, then these people think Donald Trump is a sociopath. He's a lie. He lies about everything. Now, the distinguished producers at CBS, no. They are truth tellers. They fact check everything. They just went into the editing room and pieced together a lie to make Kamala Harris look good. Who are the sociopaths? Who are the serial liars? I love this little, it's a short little clip, but this is from the debate in California between Adam Schiff, he knows something or two about lying, and then Steve Garvey, the former Dodgers player, my idol as a kid, by the way. He has no, that would be phenomenal if he were to somehow win, but it won't happen in California. There's too many liars and cheats there. In any event, listen to Garvey's. This is Garvey taking 10 seconds of the debate, piecing it together to sum up basically what the debate was about. Clip 5.
Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Trump, Trump.
How can you think about one man every day and focus on that when you've got millions of people in California to take care of?
How can you think about one man every day and focus solely on that when you've got millions of people that need help in California, in Florida, in North Carolina, in Tennessee, in Georgia, all across the country? Trump, 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 Trump. That's all they have. It's all they have. They're so obsessed with get Trump that the CBS producers, the editors, the reporters, they're hard at work piecing together a lie. A lie. And they got caught. And what do you think CBS is going to do in response? Is anybody going to get fired? No, of course not. Nobody gets fired. Nobody at FEMA gets fired. Nobody. Nobody at the Pentagon gets fired after the Afghanistan withdrawal. Nobody. Everybody, here comes Trump saying, well, I did fire people. You guys don't fire anybody. Here again, he's right. He was right. And more recently, he's totally right about CBS. Pretty amazing. I've got more news stories, but that's enough. That's enough. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back and finish with a Bible study that will lift our spirits studying the truth of God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
We're now in a time of the darkest plague ever. And our chance our only chance is this November to vote for the President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump, for 2024. There are a lot of my peers putting out videos trying to brainwash the American people to do the most dangerous vote ever, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. They both are the lowest and most vile choice that you can trust with your life, your children's life. They will destroy the American dream. They are corrupt. And my fellow Americans, they will turn the beauty that once was thriving into a prison of darkness with criminals killing and stealing. Let us bring our country to her glory. Let her thrive like Abraham Lincoln once achieved, the union of people, the dream for all. You must see the lie and vote for the only one who will save our country and make her safe again, thrive again, bloom again, Donald J. Trump.
I kind of like his speechwriters. Assuming he has them, maybe he wrote it himself. The lowest, most vile choice. He's obviously endorsed Donald Trump. One of the very few in Hollywood to do so. And we do on this show quite often, whether it's Donald Trump himself or now Elon Musk or this guy, John Voight. If they make a stand, if they make a courageous stand, this is not a popular view in Hollywood. And he's an actor. I suppose he's mostly retired, but still, this does not get him invited to the dinner parties. And good for him. Dropping a truth bomb on Hollywood. My peers, they've been putting out videos for this vile choice. Well, as we've said on this program, the sins go beyond just one political party. I made the point yesterday, right? We're just being besieged by curses, and you see some of the people that Kamala Harris has sat down with, you know, podcasts about basically pornographic content. The sins in Israel, it's a sickness, it's a cancer, and it really is destroying us. Paul said in Romans 3 and verse 10, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. Not one righteous individual? Paul said this 2,000 years ago. What would his assessment be of our society today? He says later on in this chapter that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. That's why we need the Spirit of God. That's why we need the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. That's why we need to turn to God in repentance. We can't be made righteous on our own merits. This is what we are. The righteousness of man is like filthy rags, it says in Isaiah 64. We need God. We need a miracle. We've been emphasizing in our life and teachings class all of the miracles surrounding the birth of Jesus Christ, the events leading up to it, the events shortly thereafter, and God just making his presence known, making all of these connections, just blaring the sirens, the neon lights just going off here and here. Look, I'm performing a miracle here. It was a miracle that Mary was even pregnant. It was of the Holy Spirit. Yesterday I mentioned that, you know, if you look at some of the prophecies leading up to Christ's birth, Micah 5 and verse 2 says he'd be born in Bethlehem, and then, you know, Daniel 9, the last few verses there, the 70 weeks prophecy, it gives you the time frame of about when the Messiah would appear, when his ministry would start. So the time and the place. Think of it. The time and the place were prophesied in advance. And the wise men that came from the east, they knew about this. These were men of God. These were individuals that wanted to worship Jesus Christ. And guess what? When Herod brought the Sanhedrin in, the Sanhedrin were aware of these prophecies as well. Herod says, hey, I've heard about the Son of God. What does the scripture say about where he's to be born? The Sanhedrin said it's supposed to happen in Bethlehem. So they knew. They knew the prophecies. And so did the wise men. The wise men wanted to worship Christ. The Sanhedrin, with the same information, they didn't go and worship Christ. Basically, it's implied that they were supportive of Herod's effort to blot him out, to murder him, to murder the Christ child. He killed everyone, 2 years of age and under. I mean, he slaughtered children. Joseph and Mary had to flee to Egypt. The wise men had to flee Bethlehem and go home. God was intervening. But the point I made yesterday in class is, look at the contrast between the way the wise men responded to God's prophecies and his miraculous hand and the Sanhedrin and Herod, the way they responded to God's prophecies and to his miraculous hand. The fact that this birth even happened in Bethlehem was an earth-shaking miracle from God. And as I told the students yesterday, when we see signs all around of God's involvement, of God's miraculous hand, I mean, that should humble us. That should motivate us to say, well, I want to be on that being's side. I want to look to God. I want to worship God. Most people don't respond to God's miraculous hand that way. Most of them respond like Herod. Listen, get out of my life. I want you to mind your own business. Or even worse, I want to blot you out. I want to humiliate you. I want to murder you. I want to assassinate your character. That's human nature. It shows you how strong the influence of the devil is on every one of Earth's occupants, including God's remnant people, his family, the poles of the flesh. The influence of the devil, it's so strong that even many of God's people are deceived and fall away from the truth and just consume lies and deception. We see it. We certainly see it happening on a national scale, even when it's exposed as a lie. Was there anybody in Herod's administration that said, listen, you can't go kill kids? Are you serious? Did the Sanhedrin try to stop him? Did they? What? How did they respond to that decree? Herod says, let's kill everyone in Bethlehem 2 years and under. That means Jews were killed, slaughtered. Did the Sanhedrin do anything to stop it? They were blinded by their rage. Herod, he saw the Christ child as a threat to his kingship. He was the king of the Jews. I don't want, the wise men are talking about worshiping the king of the Jews. I don't want him taking my job. It just perfectly illustrates everything that's wrong with human nature today. Human nature is moved, motivated, and driven by self-interest, self-preservation, vanity, pride. Verse 11 says, there is none that understands. There is none that seeks after God. I mean, the wise men, and there probably weren't three. It's probably 12. The wise men coming from the Babylon region, to their credit, they were seeking after God. Same with the shepherds that you can read about in Luke 2. They were seeking after God. God through the shepherds, God through the wise men, God through John the Baptist, his parents, Joseph and Mary, even heavenly signs. Just pointing the spotlight in the direction that it needed to go. This is the Son of God. And this is fulfilled prophecy. So much so that the Sanhedrin knew. So what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with this miracle or this series of miracles? Psalm 14 and verse 2 says, "The Lord looks down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God." God's peering down. Is there anybody that understands? Is there anyone that's going to seek after God like these wise men did? Or the shepherds from the hills of Judea? Is there anybody that's going to respond to this message? John the Baptist was out there 6-8 months preparing the way, preaching to large crowds. Jesus had a ministry that went for 3.5 years. And in the end, how many disciples were there? 120? Really? That's it? A 3.5 year ministry accompanied by all of these unbelievable miracles. Jesus, when he healed the 10 lepers, remember what happened there? they went away celebrating. And then one thought it would be good to come back and say, "Thank you. Thank you very much." And Jesus said, "Where are the other 9? That's the way it is. Even when we are part of the miracle, we just carry on with our own self-interest. You're not even going to go back and give thanks to the Messiah. It takes a miracle. John 6 and verse 44 says, "No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him, and I will raise him up at the last day." You see, God has to draw us to Jesus Christ. And when he does that, or if he does that, we better hold tight. We better hold fast. We better hang on. We better stay in the presence of God. We need to leap for joy, just like John the Baptist did in the womb even. As soon as Mary, the mother of God, walked in, the mother of the Christ child, she walks in and John the Baptist just rejoiced. That's, as I've been saying to our students, that's how we need to react when we come into the presence of God, whether it's in the prayer closet or in Christian fellowship. Really, God is with us everywhere we go, which means we're the happiest, most joyous people on earth. Jumping for joy. Behold the Lamb of God. Behold, rejoice, give thanks. We need that, especially in this very dark and evil world. Verse 12, "They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There's none that doeth good, no, not one." So we need help, don't we? We need God's mighty hand. I gave you an example from the former prophets last week, I think it was. Here's another. It says, "The third king over the 10 tribes was Baasha. This man actually served as God's instrument to correct the house of Jeroboam." And that's recorded in 1 Kings 15. My father says, "However, before long, Baasha fell into the very sins for which Jeroboam was punished." He fell away. My father says, "What a supreme..." Well, he quotes 1 Kings 16, where it says, "For as much as I exalted you out of the dust and made you prince over my people." What happened to your thinking? My father says, "What a supremely important point to remember. God was disgusted with this man's behavior and reminded him, remember what you are. You were exalted out of the dust. You were nothing. Yet I put you over my people. Now look what you're doing with this power that I've given to you. I gave it so you could use it to turn Israel to God, to this throne and this house, and you're betraying that calling. Remember who and what we are apart from God. Nothing. And so turn to God. Seek after God, just like those wise men did there in Matthew chapter 2. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we will see you again tomorrow.